Hey, my name is Lindsay Anderson.
And I'm Ellen Flannery Schroeder.
And you're listening to The Great Estate, a podcast about parenting.
We've got six kids and two PhDs in psychology between us, so we mostly know what we're doing.
Yeah, but not all the time. When our children throw us a curveball, we fall back on some basic parenting principles that are known to promote healthy and happy kids.
So that's what we're going to talk about today. Strategies for navigating difficult moments and keeping a sense of humor about ourselves.
And our kids.
Okay.
We're going to talk today about understanding and identifying feelings and the importance of starting that process early. So starting out of the womb. You know, talking about feelings, talking about your feelings, talking about what you see your children feeling, and thinking about the long-term benefits of helping your children develop an emotional vocabulary. So think about it as putting money in the bank. You know, if you invest now in having those conversations and committing the time and energy now, then what you're doing is building up a lifetime of emotional wealth.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Couldn't agree more. I think actually that's something that is lost on a lot of parents, the fact that building your child's emotional vocabulary or their emotional repertoire, because it's not just vocabulary. It's not learning to label my emotions, but also learning to identify emotions in other people. Mm-hmm. But I don't think psychology has done a good enough job at letting parents know that they need to build those skills in their children. Mm-hmm. So parents know to teach their kids things like colors, numbers, particularly prior to kindergarten or preschool.
Yeah.
But I don't think the majority of parents have their eye on teaching children how to recognize emotions as well.
Right. Well, and they dread it, really, right? I mean, you hear about parents dreading when their teenage daughters or when their daughters become teenagers and not wanting to have to deal with that. But the beauty of teaching your children about understanding and identifying feelings and learning how to manage those feelings and problem solving when things go wrong is that, you know, you may be able to bypass a lot of the stress and the angst that's associated with sort of high intensity emotional moments.
I think you also end up with children or adolescents who have a better understanding of what they're feeling, so can more clearly and adaptively communicate about their emotions. Mm-hmm. So there's less of the tantruming, yelling going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, we say start early, start out of the womb, start when babies are born. And
that's no joke.
No, I know.
That's serious.
And I
say it sometimes, too. I say the delivery room, and then I say I'm joking, but I'm not really joking.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that on some level, parents do it naturally, because when babies are crying, I think there's sort of a natural parental instinct to say things like, oh, you're so sad, and to, you know, sort of coddle and comfort and put some of those instinctive emotions, label those instinctive emotions for their children. I think that it happens far less as children get a little bit older, or there starts to be a little bit more parental confusion about how to do it as their children become verbal.
I wonder if some parents have a fear that if I talk about my child's nervousness or if I talk about my child's anger, mm-hmm. will I somehow be reinforcing it?
Right.
And encouraging it mm-hmm. inadvertently.
Right. And in, I would say that 95% of the time, that's the very opposite that happens. When
Absolutely.
You can label and identify a feeling, you can figure out what to do with it. And so as kids get older, it feels all the more important not just to be talking about feelings, but to be talking about a broad array of feelings. So if your child says they're feeling angry, but angry isn't really what you see, try coming up with other words that might more appropriately describe the feeling that your child is having. So maybe it's frustrated, or maybe it's irritable, or maybe you can identify some type of physiological experience that your child is having that might account for their emotions, like hunger. We were talking about your daughter being hangry.
Absolutely. There was a time, and still are times, when even though she is now 13, I'm fairly certain that she is not very good at identifying her hunger cues. Mm-hmm. And her mood becomes very sour and she becomes very difficult to live with. Mm-hmm. And she is otherwise quite a pleasant child. Mm-hmm. And so when those negative moods start to show themselves, mm-hmm. I literally ask about when was the last time you've eaten, mm-hmm. to ensure that we don't go any further down that dark road.
And there's that fine line, right, between offering an example to your child or offering a label for what your child is feeling to them versus asking them about how they're feeling. So when they're young, it's easier to say things like, you know, your arms are crossed and you're scowling at me and it looks like you're feeling really mad. And as they're older, it might be better to just offer the observations and then ask, how are you feeling? So you're withdrawn a little bit or you're not talking as much as usual. What's going on today? How are you feeling? And give them an opportunity to produce the feeling word themselves.
Right. I think you're bringing up an important point about taking care to avoid telling your child how your child feels. Though when they're quite young, that is something that you need to do so they can build that emotion word vocabulary,
right,
and be able to attach the word to the bodily cues and the physical sensations and sort of
the behaviors they use to communicate those feelings when they don't have the language for it.
Right. Because I think if you don't, and what is a very common problem that I hear from parents is parents who say, I'm asking my child how they feel in a given situation, and they can't label it. And I can't help them, mm-hmm. because I don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm. In those moments, my go-to response is always, well, give them observations, tell them what you see. Because if they can't see themselves, you know, we're not standing in front of a mirror all the time. It is hard to identify in ourselves sometimes what we're feeling, even if we could very clearly identify it in somebody else based on the same behavioral cues that we are ourselves using.
So parent modeling.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, certainly parent modeling would be one thing and talking about our own feelings, but I also just meant using your observations of your child.
Right. Yeah, no, I think I'm just trying to point out that one of the ways that you help your child to identify their own emotions is by modeling for them so that when you're feeling particularly happy you're feeling ecstatic, that you talk about your physical sensations and your behavior and you attach it to the emotion word so that your child can watch it, mm-hmm. and they can learn to do that skill on their own.
Right. Right. Well, and there are lots of different elements of what you just talked about that can be really useful. Not just talking about feelings, but also helping children to connect experiences with feelings and talking about even negative feelings. So not just talking about positive emotions and happy feelings, but talking about negative emotions or emotions like anger and anxiety. So, you know, I had a presentation to give not that long ago, and I am an anxious presenter. I just am. I always have been. I sweat. I get headaches. I tremble.
I would never have known it.
Well, thanks. But I use that as an example with my daughter, even though there was no sort of real reason for me to have brought it up, except to say, you know, I'm a little distracted this morning because I'm feeling anxious about this presentation that I have to give today. And talking about, you know, I have a little bit of a headache and I feel like my thoughts are in other places and I'm even sweating through my work clothes, which is why I have to keep the air conditioning on in the car. But using my own examples to talk about why I'm feeling a certain way, not just what I'm feeling, and not being afraid to talk about a feeling that isn't just positive.
I know. You know what I really like about that? It normalizes the experience of a negative emotion. Mm-hmm. I mean, in this case, anxiety. Mm-hmm. So the next time your daughter feels the least bit anxious, mm-hmm. it might very well be something that she talks about with you, mm-hmm. because she knows it's a safe subject. It's not something that she has to keep to herself.
Yeah. And so, we can joke about it. Yeah. Like, are you sweating? Come on. If you're not sweating, you're not nervous. We talk about this stuff with all of my kids. So my youngest isn't yet 2, my middle is not yet 4, and my eldest just turned 6. And what I love seeing, and this happens a lot in the car, which I attribute to too much very close physical proximity to one another. There's a lot of emotions that happen in the car at the end of the day. And invariably, someone ends up crying and someone ends up screaming. And what's great about that is when my youngest daughter, again, not even 2, will sort of look at me in her reflective mirror that's on the back of the headrest, you know, so I can see her, will sort of be looking at me and say, "Cry. Cry," when one of her other sisters is crying. And I can then reflect to her, even though it's happening with my other daughter, "Yeah, it seems like so-and-so is really feeling upset right now, or it sounds like they're having a conflict, or it sounds like they're fighting about something and maybe they're getting frustrated with each other and need to take a break." So even at younger than 2, and this speaks to needing to start early, you know, she can connect the fact that somebody is crying and is looking to me to help her figure out why are they crying and what's happening.
Right. You know, this reminds me a little bit of my son has a wee bit of fear surrounding flying. And oftentimes as we're preparing for some trip somewhere the night before, he'll note that he's not feeling well. You know, I'll say, "Okay, so what, you know, what are you feeling?" "Well, I feel a little bit nauseous. You know, I just don't feel quite right." And he's not connecting it to the fact that we're flying the next day. Mm-hmm. And so I find that there are a lot of times when somebody has some sort of physical sensation that even though I've tried to teach my kids about emotions, I still find that I have to do some detective work. We all have to do. I'm trying to teach them the process of doing the detective work. Yep. So what are you feeling? What's happening in the environment? What's up and coming at school? Is there anything at school? Could it be the fact that we're flying?
Or did something already happen
Absolutely. That
you haven't been able to process fully?
Right.
Well, that's really common, right? I mean, people go to the doctors all the time for physical ailments that end up being psychological or emotional in nature because it is a safer thing to identify. It is a quicker, maybe even more expedient. Maybe there's just more concrete solutions to physical problems like medication or sleep or...
Or we just don't do a good job
training.
Teaching people, yes, the association between physical symptoms and psychological symptoms.
Right. Right, which is why we need to really not only be starting young, but practice giving our children the language and practice coming up with the underlying issues and not be afraid to use those same things on ourselves or our partners as it's appropriate. You know, there are lots of ways that you can do this. We talked about developing emotions. We talked about
modeling
developing
emotions
vocabulary. What we didn't talk about is how to do that. So talking about our feelings is one thing, but... You know, there's only so many opportunities and only so many natural segues that you can weave that type of stuff into the daily conversation. But there are lots of really great tools and games and strategies that you can use on a day-to-day basis that make it feel a little bit less like a pointed conversation about identifying and understanding feelings. So things like watching characters on TV and using them as examples of what somebody might be feeling and how your child knows, or characters in a book. We have this great emotions charade game. And I don't think it was marketed as an emotions charade game, although really that's what it is. But there's a deck of cards, and on the cards there are different feeling faces. And the idea is to roll this dice, and then you have to act out whatever feeling card is on the color that the dice has rolled to. And that has been really fun because then it's a game and then it's not just about...
And wouldn't it be great to make your own game? I don't think you need to go out and buy the game.
You totally don't. That's
Absolutely.
A great idea.
Wouldn't it be fun? Mm-hmm. Draw the little faces, match them up.
Mm-hmm. Put
to
on
the
plays,
emotion
make
words.
Masks too. I mean, you know, thinking about things that you can do with your kids, get paper plates, make masks, make them make pictures of you, you know, on one side of the mask and sticks. And, you know, like, well, in this scene, I'm going to be angry. And in this scene, I'm going to be happy. And, you know, there's a lot of homemade fun that you can do when it comes to developing an emotions vocabulary and learning how to identify feelings. So what did we cover? We talked about four main principles related to understanding and identifying feelings. Number one, start early. Talk about your feelings, talk about your children's behavior and what they might be feeling, observe feelings in others. It is never too early to ensure that your kids know how to talk about their feelings. Starting this process early is an investment in lifelong emotion awareness and improved coping.
Number two, children who have a better understanding of their feelings and the feelings of others can more effectively communicate their experiences with others, which means less tantruming and improved problem solving. When we label and identify feelings, we can figure out what to do with them. Number three, model ways that you understand and identify feelings. Tell your kids when you're feeling happy, how you know you're feeling happy, and what made you happy. Talk about moments when you feel sad or nervous. Talk about how you know you're nervous, the things that made you nervous, and how you are managing those feelings. Talking about our own feelings, both positive and negative, in age-appropriate ways helps kids build connections between their emotions, their physical sensations, and their behaviors.
And number four, make it fun. Developing an emotions vocabulary doesn't have to be a heavy lift. Build it into fun things that you already do. Play feelings charades and have your kids act out different feelings and what they might look like. Talk about the characters in books and movies. How do you know what they might be feeling based on their experiences and their behavior? These activities can be important relationship-building opportunities and improve open communication between you and your child.
I'm Lindsay Anderson.
And I'm Ellen Flannery Schroeder.
And you just listened to A Greatest Eight podcast, written and produced by Drs. Lindsay Anderson and Ellen Flannery Schroeder. Associate producer and engineer was Ian Reyes.
For more information related to parenting for mental health or to listen to podcasts on other topics, please visit thegreatest8.org.
That's thegreatest8.org. These podcasts were developed by the University of Rhode Island and South County Health, with support from URI, the Rhode Island Foundation, and the Van Buren Charitable Foundation.